understanding that there is a connection and a thread that should be pulled through all of the talent practices consistently to do this work and do it right. Everyone's got to be in lock and step, kind of marching to the same end goal.
Hello, and welcome to the Talent Acquisition Leaders Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Dull, and on this show, we interview today's industry leaders in talent acquisition to discuss challenges, best practices, and what the future holds. If you are working in talent acquisition and have always wanted to sit down with your peers at other companies to exchange ideas and learn, well, this show is the next best thing. Join us each week as we bring you a new expert interview and extract their expertise. This episode is brought to you by SageMark HR. Transform your recruiting practices with leading-edge technology. Selecting the right recruiting solutions to enable your strategy is one of the biggest challenges leaders face today. You know technology will help, but searching all the options to find out what will work best for your specific needs can be both overwhelming and time-consuming. At SageMark HR, we make selecting the right recruiting technology easy. Our proven process has helped companies such as 3M, Comcast, Stryker, Walgreens, and many more. Reach out to us at SageMark HR for a free consultation to learn how we can help you improve results with less stress and confidently change from reacting to leading. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Talent Acquisition Leaders. I'm your host, Ryan Dull, and today we have a fun conversation with my friend Kamari Williams. Kamari is the Senior Director of Programs and Operations at Workday. Kamari, welcome to the show. Great to see you again.
Good seeing you too, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. So let's start out as we usually do. And if you could just share a little bit about your background, maybe go back to how you got started in talent roles, where you've been leading up to this role at Workday, and a little bit about your background.
Absolutely. So I'll start way, way back. I did go to college for human resources. So I have a bachelor's of business administration in HR. And then also several years later, pursued an MBA. But I did go to college with the brilliant idea to go into human resources. And I think I really wanted to be a generalist. That was like the dream goal, was to get into a generalist role where I could do lots of different things and then ultimately kind of work in employee relations capacity. And when I graduated shortly after 9/11, it was extremely difficult to find a role. It was hard to find anything in HR, let alone going into kind of like what my dream job would have been. And honestly, I ended up taking a role as a recruiter because it was really difficult to find anything else. I mean, they were definitely willing to give you a shot to get into HR, a TA role. And so I took it. I mean, I ended up working for a great organization. It was called Velasys at the time. And they were an organization that did freestanding inserts or coupons, which is freestanding inserts is just a kind of a fancier way of saying that. But worked for Velasys, and that was my first role out of college. I actually traveled the U.S. doing campus recruiting. So I got to recruit students from all different universities, would partner with the actual universities to identify talent, work with programs like En-ROADS, and really built out diversity recruiting strategies. And that was, you know, 20 years ago. And that probably is what started to spark my interest in the D&I space. But spent the first 2 years of my career doing campus recruiting. And then quickly after that, moved over to Quicken Loans, where I spent several years doing more of the professional level hiring. And that was exciting because it gave me really like, that's where I like built my chops in recruiting. The campus recruiting was intense, but in a different way. When I went to Quicken, it was high volume recruiting, fast paced. We were commission based, very similar to like an agency model. And it was my first real experience kind of in that fast-paced grind, hiring, you know, 20, 30, 40 people a month. That's where I really started to develop a love for the space.
That's great. How about after Quicken? So to talk about like after Quicken, so you're in the space, you're learning, you're kind of cutting your teeth in the high volume recruiting space, and then talk a little bit about where you went after that and how that ultimately those next couple stops brought you to Workday.
Yeah. So while I was at Quicken, I ended up getting promoted into management. So I think maybe 2 or 3 years into the role as a recruiter, was promoted to the manager of the team. And that was my first time, obviously, ever managing people. So that was initially a really steep transition. And it was probably one of the first, like, when I look at the pivotal moments in my career, getting promoted to a leadership role was one of them. And then obviously being promoted amongst my peers was just at the time, huge, right? And so I had to learn how to interact and how to treat folks that I was eating lunch with in the cafeteria as peers. Now I'm the boss. So that transition was initially challenging, but I look back and it was obviously one of the things that really prepared me for higher level leadership roles down the line in my career. So spent several years at Quicken and then moved over actually to an affiliate company, Fathead, and spent, I think, probably less than a year at Fathead and ultimately ended up getting laid off. It was right around the time where the mortgage industry was really struggling between 2008, 2009. And after being laid off, took a couple weeks and kind of figured out what I felt like would be good next steps. And honestly, Ryan, I took a contract role. I tell this story all the time. I took a contract role as an HR manager at a plant for $15 an hour. And with the understanding that they would hire me to perm. And I remember telling my boyfriend, now husband at the time, like, I'm going to take this contract role. I'm going to just forego my unemployment. I trust that they're going to do what they say they're going to do, which is hire me on permanently. And I trust the talent enough that I feel like I have to just take the leap and not take this unemployment for now. And that's exactly what happened. So I did 90 days. They hired me on permanent. And the irony in the story is that I ended up making more money in that role than I was in the role that I had gotten laid off from. So it was like a moment of, you think something bad happened because a door closed. And ultimately, it really positioned me probably better because I actually got into really doing HR in a manufacturing facility, but it just gave me such great experience, especially being in Metro Detroit because it was automotive. You almost can't not touch automotive in Detroit. So it was a good opportunity to really get more on the ground HR experience in a plant.
Yeah, and it definitely positioned you well for opportunities as they came down, because I know the next steps of your career as well, right? And so from that point, then share a little bit about where you went after that plant HR role and how that kind of transpired.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you say that, because I do look at it as every opportunity or step kind of prepared me for the next thing. So I moved out of that role and went into a project management role for an organization called CareTech, and they do healthcare technology and solutions. And so I didn't spend a ton of time in that role, but what it did was it gave me a little bit more rigor around project management and understanding just what a PMO does, how that works. And I also dabbled a little bit in recruiting because I had the skill set. But it really then positioned me for the role I ultimately took at ADP. And it wasn't ADP at the time. It was called The Right Thing. They were acquired by ADP as an account manager. And that role was my first time ever doing RPO. So I'd worked as an intern for Kelly Services. So I understood kind of what the model is and how you outsource recruiting or have recruiting support, but full on, full-fledged RPO. This was my first time seeing it in operation, but it was kind of the prior roles had really prepped me for this. So having the TA experience and then now having a little bit more structure around project management was a really good segue into RPO. And I think I stayed in RPO with ADP, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. I always tell people the roles that are the most challenging for me are the ones that I seem to stay in the longest, right? Like, the more challenge, the more I feel like I have to continue to rise to the occasion and continue to elevate, I tend to stay a lot longer in those type of roles. So I spent a couple of years as an account manager and then was promoted there to an account director and was overseeing at the time, it was the largest RPO customer that ADP had. And I also had a smaller account, which was Kamau. And those were both obviously automotive. So I had Fiat Chrysler and Kamau were my clients.
Yeah, we met each other that time when you were in that role, and definitely challenging to deliver for in that environment with that kind of volume and RPO capacity and things. You definitely learned a lot. And then from there, took over TA at Harman, right? And so you could talk a little bit about kind of your role there that led you to Workday.
Yeah, and I think when I got into RPO, I didn't know what I didn't know. And what was interesting is just the skills that I gained along the way, the rigor, the operational mindset that I have today and I carry into all of my roles. I definitely feel like I picked that up in my role with ADP. And so when I moved over to Harman, interestingly enough, what was neat about that was I could take all of that experience and then obviously scale it, because Harman, my reach was far bigger. So we were talking, I think, 32 countries trying to support hiring around the globe and kind of be the central face of TA for the organization and also driving forward process change. We rolled out a global EVP that was successfully launched when I was there, launched a new career site, which was huge for the team. And that role, I think it was like literally the dream team. I work with very, very talented people today. But I think the unique thing about that scenario was just the synergy amongst the team that we built and the ability to work in really highly stressful situations, have extremely compressed timelines to deliver things and be able to do that and scale globally was phenomenal. I've not experienced anything like that since. And I attribute it to the creation of like this amazingly talented team. So that was a great opportunity.
Yeah, that's great. All right. Now let's talk about current role and current state a little bit. And so now you're at Workday. Let's chat a little bit. Just help me understand your current role, kind of the scope of what you do, and then we can kind of get into some of the initiatives that you've led.
Yeah, absolutely. So before I left Harman, I ended up moving out of TA and I moved into diversity and inclusion and talent management. And so did that role for about a year and got a call about an opportunity while I was implementing Workday, ironically. And the role that I'm in today is leading our programs and operations team, reporting into our chief diversity officer. And so my team is responsible for looking across the enterprise and understanding where we can make improvements from an inclusion, belonging, and equity standpoint within the organization. So figuring out how we scale kind of global programming that supports communities that may not be having the same exact experience as the majority within the organization.
Yeah, that's great. So within that, let's talk a little bit, if you wouldn't mind sharing some of the initiatives that you and your team have led maybe over the last year or so and kind of some of the successes that you've had.
Yeah, there's a couple that I'll name. We had identified some pockets within the organization that we wanted to just increase our overall sentiment on. And so when I joined the organization, it was an area of focus already for the team. And we knew that we needed to continue to really double down and increase our efforts in this particular area. And so just in partnership with the business and working with obviously my team, and then in this particular case, we worked with an external agency to do some focus groups to really kind of crystallize some of the issues, we were able to make great improvements in our belonging sentiment in this particular area. So what I would say is that if you're on a journey to address gaps in sentiment and or equity, really getting a pulse of what the current state is and baselining your organization and really understanding if you have the data, how people feel and what the actual data is pointing to is really, really helpful. So that's one. We had, again, a pocket in the organization where we wanted to increase the sentiment and we have some really targeted strategic initiatives to do that. I also have oversight over our employee belonging councils, which are EBCs in our world or ERGs in the rest of the world. And so we have 11 of them that span across multiple dimensions of diversity. And so those organizations are really proactively doing programming and are aligned directly to our strategy, but they are very focused on how do we build and engage community across 11 different groups and populations within our organization. So those are just kind of two things or areas that my team is focused on, but obviously across inclusion, belonging, and equity, we have a lot of initiatives. We also partner with external organizations like MLT or Ascend, for example, Out and Equal to provide resources, support, and development for our organization. So Out and Equal, for example, has a lot of resources that we tap into. We're not the subject matter experts in every area of diversity just because this is what we do. And so we rely on those partnerships to be able to deepen our knowledge, but then also provide opportunity for our workmates to engage.
Great. That's a lot of really powerful initiatives, and I know you're doing great work. Let's talk a little bit about what you have going forward, what you see in the future. So what's your vision kind of for the function and for Workday as it relates to your roles? What kind of the vision that you have and some major initiatives that you see moving forward from here?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question. I was at an event a couple of months ago and someone asked the question around, well, does it feel like D&I is slowing down, right? So there was so much energy post George Floyd, his murder, that people are feeling like all of a sudden kind of organizations are taking their foot off the gas a little bit. And I would say that Workday is quite the opposite. I know that my team and certainly the other teams on our diversity and belonging team are really positioned to kind of ramp up and gear things up. We are focusing heavily on just obviously increasing representation like most organizations are and making sure that we've got balance across our organization. So we want to make sure that we are being an example, obviously, across our customer base and the industry and just in tech in general. And one way to do that is to ensure that your representation is balanced. The other area that we're continuing to focus in is just equity, right? So what is the experience like for all of your employees, and ensuring that that is consistent and equitable across the board is important. I think we talk a lot about representation, but it's not enough to just hire folks from historically marginalized backgrounds and not ensure the equity of their experience, their compensation, all of those things. And so that's obviously will be a continued focus for Workday. And I would say the last area that we're really just trying to kind of continue to focus on is how do we globally scale the work that we're doing? We have workmates around the world, and it is important to make sure that the strategies that we're putting forth to support our diversity and belonging initiatives feel relevant to them wherever they're sitting in the world.
Yeah, those are great initiatives. So last question I'd have for you is, what advice would you provide for others, whether it's in the TA space, the talent management space, the D&I space? You've got a breadth of experience and expertise across that, and you've learned a lot through your career. So what's some advice that you would provide for others?
You know what I would say, Ryan, is that there has to be a connection to the work pulled all the way through. If that's the one thing that I've learned in my career, so I've touched, obviously, diversity and inclusion, which is what I'm doing now. I sat in talent acquisition. I also supported talent management globally. And so understanding that there is a connection and a thread that should be pulled through all of the talent practices consistently to do this work and do it right. Everyone's got to be in lock and step, kind of marching to the same end goal. If that's not in place, it does make it very difficult to move the needle. What should not be the case is that you as a D&I professional feel like you're on an island, kind of forcing everybody to align to whatever you have going on. It should be you're locking arms with your partners. Even if the org structure doesn't necessarily require that, you still are locking arms with your partners and you're attacking the work together. I think that's probably the biggest lesson that I've learned over the years is how important it is for, especially with D&I, to make sure that your partners, your COEs, that we're all really supporting each other and moving the needle.
That's great advice. Yeah, collaborate across groups, across structures, and make sure that everyone is aligned around what the initiative is and works towards that together. That's really powerful. I couldn't agree more. Great. Well, Kamari, thank you so much for joining me. It's always fun meeting with you and talking with, and I love watching your continued success. So kudos to you, and thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you, Ryan.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Talent Acquisition Leaders Podcast. If something we said today resonated with you, please subscribe, rate, and download our podcast and share the episode with your network. Ready to transform your recruiting practices with leading-edge technology just like our other clients at 3M, Comcast, Stryker, and Walgreens? Then reach out at sagemarkhr.com for a free consultation.